Hello everyone, my name is Crystal Hicks.
And my name is Lucy Malarkey.
And we're from WISH, which is womeninsocialhousing.org, and you're listening to the If I Had One Wish podcast.
This is a podcast where we delve deeper into stories from inspirational women who work in the social housing sector, to understand the barriers that they've overcome, to be inspired by their journeys, and to learn from their experiences. And we'll of course be asking the big question, if they had one wish, what would it be and why?
To kick off the series, we're joined by none other than the godmother of female networking in the sector, the awe-inspiring, the phenomenal, the co-founder of WISH, Nicola Dibb. Welcome, Nicola. So lovely to have you join us. And to be honest, we couldn't possibly have started this series with anyone else.
Thank you so much for those words, Crystal. Good morning, Lucy and Crystal, and thank you so much for inviting me to the very first WISH podcast on this beautiful sunny morning, and it's great to be here.
You're very welcome. Delighted to have you here. And I think, you know, it would be great, Nicola, if we can perhaps start right at the very beginning. You know, as a song says, it's a great place to start. So I think it'd be good if we could ask you, Nicola, in the first instance, to share with us your career journey and tell us how and why you established WISH.
Okay. So I did a housing degree a long time ago for Bristol Polytechnic and started working for Lovell Partnerships in Manchester in the early 90s. And one thing that I realised quite quickly was there wasn't very many other women in the business that I was working in, which was working for the contractor, but also working with local authorities and housing associations. So all the architects that I came across were men, all the engineers on the client side, etc. So that was just something that I noticed straight away, that quite often in meetings I was the only female. Then after I left that company, I went to work for Notting Hill Housing Trust, as it was in those days. And that was a really great experience. And I noticed that there were more women in that organisation, which was great, and more senior women, which I hadn't experienced any senior women working on in the private sector. And as I moved from Notting Hill to work for a house builder, that's when I set up WISH, basically. So there was a lot of networking that I had to do in my position as a business development manager. And I walked into a networking event and was met by this sea of grey suits, men in grey suits, which wasn't unusual in those days. So we're talking sort of in the mid 90s. And I met a few women that I knew at the back of the room, and we just sort of started chatting and shared lots of stories about what they were doing, what jobs they were working on, who they were working with. And it was really refreshing because there was just sort of different conversations and we were communicating in a different way. It wasn't about sort of trying to win the next job or anything like that. It was just actually getting to know each other and sharing our experiences. So had a really good time. And at the end, I said, oh, we should all get together again sometime. It's been really nice to see you. And there was a few other women that came over, sort of gravitated towards us away from the sea of grey suits on the other side of the room. And so I went home and I thought, oh, you know, let's try and set up like a, I don't know what made me think about it, but, you know, a little group, and what could we call it? And that's when I came up with the idea of, well, we're all women and we're working in the social housing sector. So WISH had quite a nice ring to it. And that's really where it started, on a very basic level of women getting together that worked in social housing for providers, so housing associations and local authorities, but also private women in the private sector as well, because at that time there wasn't really anything, especially for the private sector women, because you have the CIH. So there were women, obviously, that were members of the CIH, but in particular for the private sector there wasn't really anything. And actually, I don't think there is still really anything. I mean, you've got the individual disciplines that have their women's groups. So that's why it was, you know, so unique, and the meetings became, the get-togethers became very dynamic, because we had women from lots of different walks of life, but all joined by a love of social housing.
So how long ago was that, Nicola, that you first set up Wish and had those first, you know, meetings, get-togethers?
Well, Lucy, believe it or not, it was about 26 years ago, which is amazing to think. But yeah, it was 26 years ago, and it started in London, which was where I was working at the time. And we just had kind of informal meetings with people who the word spread quite quickly. And then after that, I moved to work for another contractor, and Deborah Constance came to work at that contractor, and she'd been to a couple of the meetings that we'd had, a couple of the Wish meetings. But because I was sort of quite early on in my career, I had a lot of pressure on me to, you know, get to grips with my job and all of that kind of thing. I'd kind of let it all drift away because I didn't really have time to organise it, and it was quite a big thing for me to do on my own. And so when Deborah joined, she said, "Oh, whatever happened?" I can really remember having this conversation. "Whatever happened to that Wish group that you set up a few years ago?" And I said, "Oh, you know, I haven't really had time to do anything about it. And, you know, we had a few good meetings." But she said, "Well, look, why don't I come on board and help you, you know, revitalise it?" And I said, "Oh, okay." And that really is kind of where it really started, I would say. More focus. The two of us together were a bit of a force to be reckoned with.
Force for nature.
Force of nature. Force to be reckoned with. And, of course, we had our own. So her network was different to my network. So we were able to reach out to other women. And so, yeah, that was probably about 2000, 2001, that kind of happened around that time.
You know, I've been involved with Wish for maybe 7 years or so now, and even as vice president, I never tire of hearing the story of Wish and how it came about, because there's always something new that I learn every time it's told, and it's such an inspiring story, and I think shows just how women, when we've got a passion or a cause, there's nothing that stops us, even if it takes a little bit longer than we maybe would have initially planned for it to. And you've talked a little bit, Nicola, about the challenges and some of the challenges that led to Wish sort of being set up, you know, that sea of grey suits, I think is a really fantastic phrase. What do you think has been the biggest challenge that you've faced or had to overcome in your career?
Probably realizing that I have to behave and speak and even look in a certain way to be taken seriously, certainly in the early days, which was quite a shock to me. And you know, going back to the early days when I was quite often the only woman in the room, I could see people looking at me thinking, "Well, what's she here for? Is she here to take the minutes or make the tea?" I mean, that sounds amazing in this day and age, but actually that was what I used to feel like. And whenever there was a break, they'd all look at me and say, "Oh, do you mind going to put the kettle on?"
Do you know what, Nicola? You're saying that might sound amazing in this day and age, but actually that's still something that happens. Mm. You know, we hear women reporting to us, you know, through the annual survey that we carry out, that those things still happen, which is amazing,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it wasn't until I was able to, you know, almost prove to the other people in the room that I did know what I was talking about and I had a contribution to make. And I used to sort of see people's eyes light up. Oh, right. Oh, yes. Well, she's made a very good point there. and then it was like I was kind of able to legitimately join the meeting because I'd said something and that they were surprised about and that I obviously knew my stuff. So that, and yeah, it's interesting to hear that. I'm sure it still does go on, which is, yeah, disappointing, but not massively surprising, I'm guessing, especially in the in our sector where there is more men than women working.
You know, I think, Nicola, you were incredibly ahead of your time in forming that female-focused networking organisation that is WISH, because there's been subsequently so much research, hasn't there, about, you know, the value and the necessity of having female-focused networking events, because the reality is that as women, we network differently from men. You know, when we all can appreciate, you know, the value of having a network around you, a personal network, but a professional network as well. But that the vibe has to be different, I think, to really work for women. And I think it was, you know, you seeing that, recognising that and setting up WISH is a fantastic achievement. Amazing.
Thank you so much. I am hugely proud of WISH and those days and also what you guys are doing with it today and in the future. It's very special to me, WISH. It's like a child that I've seen grow up. And the other thing that's worth mentioning really is the male allies that we've worked with over the years. So in particular, somebody that I used to work with at Waits, and I caught up with him sometime last year, and that's quite an emotional meeting because he said, I remember the day you and Deborah walked into my office. So this is when Deborah and I were both working at the same organisation, and you told me about WISH and what you wanted to do, and he said, and I thought it was the most amazing thing ever. And you know, and he was hugely supportive, and probably wouldn't have got it off the ground because we were having to leave our work to go to the events. I mean, they were all in the evening, but we were having to leave at 3:30, 4:00 to travel into London. He was always really, really supportive of that, and you know, so I think that was important, and it's really sort of quite gratifying when I hear men now say to me, oh yes, I've encouraged my female staff to go to WISH events, because you know, that's what we need. We need the women to be able to feel that they are supported by their workplace and their male colleagues. You know, if they're not confident enough to sort of to go off their own will, really.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you talked quite a bit there about the early days and, you know, being quite new in your role, but, you know, really progressing the whole WISH idea and working with Deborah. I wonder if there's any advice that you reflect on now that you would go back and give to the younger version of yourself.
Well, I think, Lucy, one of the things that I would give advice to my younger self is to not be afraid to ask questions. And if you think something, it's quite likely that other people think it as well. And that was a lesson that I learned really quite early on in my career. And I'd be sitting around a table thinking, not quite sure what that means or why they've made that decision or whatever. And I found that if I spoke up and said, oh, could somebody explain what you mean about that? Or what have we decided to do about this particular thing? Quite often other people in the room would say, yes, I was wondering about that as well, and what is it that we've decided? And you think, and that was like a real light bulb moment for me. So that's one of the things that I would definitely say to my younger self is sort of you know, challenging the status quo just because other people in the room are going down one particular direction. Don't be afraid to make a point and to ask a question, because you never know who else in that room is thinking the same as you. I might be thinking, oh, I'm really glad that she's asked that because I didn't want to. So yeah. And also I would say, don't be afraid of more senior people, because they're only human beings. So that definitely was one thing that I would say to my younger self. Don't worry about sort of looking stupid or making the wrong comment or whatever. And just go for it if it's something that you really believe. And I think another bit of advice that I would give to the younger version of myself is to step out of your comfort zone. Don't be afraid to step out of your comfort zone, because great things can happen. It's always a character building. And I always like the expression, what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is you do it and you never do it again because it was so awful. But actually, the best thing that can happen is you absolutely smash it, be that giving a speech, standing up, doing a bit of public speaking, or a training session, or hosting a meeting, or whatever it might be, or taking on a role that's a little bit out of your skill set. And doing a really good job and building your confidence and going on to greater things. So I think that definitely would be something that I would say, actually, give it a go. And you never know what might happen and the great things that might come from that. And so that's definitely advice that I would give my younger self as well.
And I think that is you, Nicola, in a sense. You know, you do go with your gut and your motivations, and you know, you seem to have been so driven to just sort of passionately pursue a goal and in a dream, which I think is sort of why you've been so successful and why Wish has been so successful over the years. We can only do so much though, can't we? Time is finite. And I suppose when you look back, I'm curious, are there any doors that you think, oh, I wonder what would have happened if I'd pushed that door open, or maybe opportunities that were presented to you but you just couldn't do it for whatever reason at the time, that you think, oh, I wonder what that might have led to?
So I think, Crystal, there has been occasions where I felt a little bit like a rabbit in the headlights, because there's so many opportunities around, and I felt like I didn't have anyone to talk those things through with. And I never had a mentor, and that's something that I regret to a certain extent. I think I tried to take it all on myself, and I didn't talk it through with anyone. So when there were job opportunities, there's one in particular that I remember. It was a director of regeneration or something at a contracting company, and I thought, oh, you know, I don't think that I'm the right person for that. But there was part of me that thought, actually, why shouldn't I go for it? And that's one thing that I really try and do with other people, other women that I talk to, is encouraging. Because I think if somebody had come to me and said, you know, you've got a lot of good skills for that job, why don't you go for it? And I also say to people, even the process of going for an interview can be really, enhancing, because it makes you realise how much you know. I think that maybe getting a mentor is one thing that I regret, and that could have opened more doors for me. That's something that maybe I would have done differently.
Mentoring is super powerful, isn't it? You know, having benefited really early on in my career from having a fantastic mentor, you know, who's still a friend now, you know, it is really, really powerful, definitely. Nicola, you've achieved so much, leaving a lasting legacy on the sector in so many ways. But, you know, from everything we've heard from you today, we can't imagine, can we, Crystal,
no,
that you're going to be resting on your laurels anytime soon. So what is it? What's the next big thing for Nicola?
Well, Lucy, you're right. I'm not resting on my laurels. And I've just started a new company called Solve Social Value, which is, I'm running that with three other people. And it's focused on basically helping organisations deliver social value and on construction projects, and really making that, ensuring that that social value is impactful for the communities that are in the area that the construction project is being delivered. So as a result of my bid writing work, I was finding that I was writing a lot of answers to questions about what social value that you would deliver, or would my clients deliver. So my clients are contractors and consultants. And then once they won the job, they were so focused on starting on site and building the buildings and building the homes that actually social value was getting pushed to one side, and it, and they were struggling with actually the delivery side of it. So and we're also talking to contracting authorities about how we can help them put their social value policies and frameworks in place based on their the real local needs of their community. So if the requirements at procurement stage are more real and are more authentic in terms of, you know, what that community wants, then when the social value is delivered, it's more impactful. You know, it's no point asking a contractor to deliver something that's actually not needed in a local community. So that's what I'm doing at the moment, and it's really exciting.
You know, Nicola, I think what strikes me about you is you're always sort of just a few steps ahead of the rest of the world. You know, I've heard people say to me in my professional network over the past year, somebody really should be doing something about social value, you know, like these contractors promise the world and deliver nothing because they don't know how to deliver. They know how to write a good bid, but not necessarily then what does it take to deliver that in these communities. So I knew someone would be doing something about it, and it's obviously. So I think you're gonna. That's gonna be a much needed service for across all the sectors. So thank you, and best of luck with it. We do have a question for you. It's a question we're going to ask all of our guests on the podcast, and the title of our podcast, "If You Had One Wish," gives it away. So, not to put you on the spot, but if you had one wish, what would it be and why?
I think that my one wish would be to see an everlasting legacy of Wish. Some people have said to me over the years, oh, well, you know, when the construction industry and the housing sector is 50% women, there won't be a need for Wish anymore. And I absolutely think that that is totally wrong, because as you said, Lucy, the way that women communicate and network is very different. What Wish gives to women is a safe space for them to be themselves. There's no hidden agendas going on, and they're with, you know, they're with other people that they can feel comfortable with, and that is something that I would love to see. And one of the things that gives me particular pride and joy is going to Wish events and seeing younger women coming through. So that, to be totally honest, I go to Wish events now and I don't know anyone, and that's a great thing actually, because what it's showing to me is there's this lifeblood of female talent coming through the sector, and they're coming to these Wish events. And they're so passionate about the sector, about what they're doing, and also, you know, what Wish gives them. And so I actually was speaking to a client of mine the other day who was very nervous about networking, and I think that she felt the grey suit syndrome. I said, look, why don't you come along to a Wish event with me? She was still quite nervous, and she said, well, I'm not very good at networking and I wouldn't know what to say and all this sort of thing. So I brought her along, and she was quite quiet for the first sort of half an hour, and sort of getting the measure of the room. But then I saw her go off and talk to people, and then afterwards she said, oh, it was really good, I really enjoyed it, and, you know, meeting other women who have got the same issues as me. And I think that she felt happier. And I know that Wish is a great place to go to feel happier about yourself, about what's going on, picking up tips, making you more confident and feeling that support from other people, and actually getting different perspectives about what's going on. That's really, really important. So and making you feel more connected with people, which is what we all want. I'd love Wish still to be going when my son's, you know, getting older and, you know, potentially I'm not around anymore. I know that's a bit of a morbid thing to say, but it is this long-lasting legacy that I really, really hope carries on, because I know that people get so much out of it. And, that would be my one wish.
And what a wonderful wish that is. And what a great way to end the conversation, Nicola. And, you know, we'd like to say a massive thank you for coming along to the first podcast, putting yourself through this. And, you know, to echo so much of what you've said there, you know, Wish is inspiring because it's been developed by such an inspiring woman as yourself, along with Deborah. There will be a lasting legacy for Wish, I have no doubt. There is such a need for that female networking in terms of happiness, empowering and bringing people together, enthusing women to go back into the workplace, you know, with all of the confidence and the skills that they've gained from those networking events. So, can we say a massive thank you, Nicola.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lucy and Crystal, for having me this morning. It's been really quite emotional and special for me to reflect, actually. I know I don't reflect enough on how Wish started and what Wish is today. So thank you very much for helping me reflect, which I know I don't do enough as a general rule. So it's been brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the If I Had One Wish podcast. Next time, we'll be talking to another inspirational female from the housing sector who will be sharing her career story and what she's learned along the way. And of course, we'll be asking again the big question. If she had one wish, what would it be and why? See you next time.